Chapter 19. That Which I Fear. A harsh knocking awakened Kairos, coming from downstairs. He squeezed his eyes tightly shut to gather the strength to open them properly, and blinked several times to clear the blur he saw at first. The knocking repeated as he rolled out of his bed and found his shoes. He had fallen asleep fully clothed, which left him one way marker of etiquette closer to being able to answer the door to polite company. He stumbled down the stairs as he tried to bring his mind around from its torpor. "One moment," he called down ahead of him, hopefully forestalling any further knocking. He paused briefly to run his fingers through his matted and tangled hair quickly before opening the door. "Expert Kairos, I do not take kindly to being kept waiting," the client at the door said. He was a rotund man with a beard that ran down both sides of his face and up through a mustache, but skipped the chin. Speaking to his apparent years, the facial hair and what remained atop his head had gone well and truly gray. He was dressed expensively, and a carriage waited behind him on the street, its door ajar with a footman beside.
"Lord Darrell, my apologies. I know your daughter's wedding invitations were a rush job. I stayed up the night finishing them. I will fetch them directly."
Kairos disappeared back inside briefly. He returned shortly with a carefully tied bundle, which he handed to Lord Darrell, along with a rolled parchment.
"There you are, your lordship. 800-odd invitations, and the copy of the guest list you provided. I beg your pardon for my appearance and lateness in arising this morning."
"Well, expert Kairos, you made good your promise. Expert Jurin could do no better than a week, so I was leery of your boast of 2 days. But I needed those invitations quickly. When you did not answer my knock, I suspected you had failed your commission. Thank you."
Lord Darrell inclined his head in acknowledgement and reached into his vest pocket.
"Your payment, and perhaps a bit extra." He winked at Kairos.
"Would you like to untie the bundle and have a look to make sure you're satisfied?" Kairos asked.
No time for that now,"
Lord Darrell said as he turned back toward his carriage.
"I must arrange for these to be delivered. With just over a month to the wedding, far-flung guests will have barely enough time to make arrangements to attend. If I find they are not in proper order, you shall hear of it, though," he said, then chuckled.
Kairos locked the door as soon as Lord Darrell had departed. That one job had earned him 3,500 eccles, plus whatever tip his lordship had alluded to. He could afford to close up shop for a week and not notice the loss, so he planned to enjoy the day, especially since the morning had not gotten off to a promising start, what with waking to an impatient client nearly staving in his door. But there was time enough to rehabilitate it. Continuing to try to rub the sleep from his eyes, Kairos headed back upstairs. He washed up properly and changed into fresh clothes. He levitated a comb through his hair a few times, but shaved in the more conventional manner, as he was still not confident enough of his new power to trust it with a blade near his throat. He would have skipped the shaving entirely, but Abelay had expressed a preference for his appearance without the beard. He regarded his reflection in the mirror and saw his clean-shaven face staring back at him with red-rimmed eyes. The late nights were taking something of a toll on him. With clients calling at what most folk would consider reasonable hours, he could ill afford to be lying abed until noon or later each day. Sooner or later, he would have to either choose to alter the way he ran Davin's old Scrivener shop or to find a more secluded place to practice his magic. Maybe move to a new building that had a cellar, or maybe somewhere in the caves along the beach south of town. However, the former would require saving up enough coin to purchase a new building, and the latter seemed rather inconvenient. He sighed and resolved to think more on it later. For the time being, he would save his hobbies for after dark. Though he looked a bit bedraggled, he felt much better after having gotten himself sorted out, and a more suitable sight to be out in public. He hefted the large purse that Lord Darrell had given him, which he had set down on the bedside table. It felt heavy and substantial in his hand, more money than he had ever made from a single job. Even copying an entire book usually pocketed him less, but Lord Darrell had been desperate to have his daughter's wedding arrangements settled quickly. Kyrus was no fool and realized when Darrell had approached him that his daughter must have been expecting a child. Kyrus had priced the job accordingly and trusted in his magic to help him do the job speedily enough. The arrangement worked out to the satisfaction of both, even if Kyrus might seem to have taken advantage of the desperate nobleman. But Lord Darrell had coin to spare and needed to protect his reputation. Kyrus, on the other hand, had reputation to spare and needed the money. Kyrus could not help but wonder how much better a businessman he could become once he knew a wider array of magics to help him deliver otherwise impossible results. That thought prompted Kyrus to wonder when he would learn any new spells. His counterpart in the other world had spent much time on the road of late, and his two magical companions had seemingly been less interested in showing off their magic than they had in just getting to their capital city. Kyrus hoped that now that Brannis was back in a city of magic, he would have ample opportunity to see new spells. Perhaps he could find a way to more explicitly convey his desire to Brannis. "Hello, Sir Knight. Brannis, if you can hear me, go find a magic show to watch, or a good book of spells to read or something," Kyrus spoke aloud. He was not sure if Brannis was aware of him the way he was aware of Brannis, but he supposed it could not hurt to ask. Kyrus made his way back downstairs in slightly less haste than on his previous trip. He looked around the workroom and saw the quills lying about, along with half-emptied inkpots. "I ought to get that put away, in case anyone stops by. They should wonder what kind of establishment I run if I have a dozen quills and inkpots everywhere." He started to walk over to tidy up, tidy being a relative term, given all the other books and papers lying about, but stopped himself short. "No one will be coming today. And if they do, they shall find the shop closed." Resolving to worry about the mess later, and after all, he would just be back at work and needing them again later on, he turned for the door. Locking the shop behind him, he headed off to see Abelay, whistling a happy, off-key melody as he went. As he passed the cobbler's shop, he acquired an admirer. This admirer had been waiting all morning for him to leave his shop, watching the door and biding his time. As the admirer fell into step several paces back, Kyrus walked on in ignorance. Kyrus sauntered down the streets of Acardia, in no particular rush. He knew that Abelay would have work to do and that he would be interrupting her, so he decided to take his time in getting to her studio. She had stopped by his shop often enough during the middle of the day, though, that he was nearly certain she could afford at least a part of the afternoon in leisure. As he passed near Gruder's, he caught a whiff of the midday pastries and veered off on a new course. He realized that he had not eaten yet, and his stomach took over navigation and steered him toward spiced crescents. The noontime rush had dissipated along with noontime, and there was no line waiting to get in. Kyrus slipped inside and took a table. "Good morning, Gruder," he called out, smiling. The dining area was not quite empty, but most of the patrons seemed closer to finishing their meals than beginning them. Kyrus recognized most, but there was no one that he knew well enough that he felt obliged to strike up a conversation.
"Well, well, expert Kyrus, you seldom come here for luncheon, and you would be late even if you were of the habit. Clock tower's bell not loud enough for you?" Gruder said, raising his voice to be heard across the room from behind the counter where he was beginning to clean up after the day's baking.
"Oh, I had a late night of it, working on a rush job. Took the early hours off and decided to push morning back until after midday. Seemed sensible since I would much prefer a few spiced crescents over a bowl of stew," Kyrus said.
"Well then, I fear you have made a grave error. I have only 5 of them little morsels left, and I had promised them to the alley cats.
The little dears have been waiting quietly out there all morning, and I could not bear to disappoint them. Now, if you had come in at a respectable hour... Oh, Gruder, if you have 5 left, I shall purchase them and promise to share them with the cats. I might go so far as to pitch in a little extra so you might find them a saucer of milk to wash it down with. Kairos winked. Gruder, of course, had made no such promise for the last of the spiced crescents, feline or otherwise, and Kairos was soon slaking his hunger on the finest breakfast to be had at 2 hours past noon. Despite being in no rush, he gulped down the sweet pastries as if he had not eaten all day, which he had not. So, Mr. Expert, Gruder sat down across from him as the last of the other patrons departed. You have yet to stop smiling since you arrived. I know how wonderful my spiced crescents are. I actually know precisely how wonderful they are. But they are not that wonderful. Out with it, Kairos. Have you found yourself a girl? Or have they just gone ahead and made you high overlord of all Scriveners this time? Is it that plain to see? Kairos asked, trying his best to look sheepish, but falling short of the mark. Aye, it is. Do tell. Well, it seems that I have a rather unique and remarkable gift, and my fellows in the Scrivener's Guild... Gruder cut him short with a cleaning towel to the head, which got them both laughing. No, really, boy. Who is she? You intend to keep it secret? Not hardly, Kairos grinned. I doubt I could had I wanted to, given how transparent I apparently am. Do you know Abelay Tillman? You mean old Jeremy's girl, the painter? Gruder asked. I suppose so. I had never known her father, but she is a painter, Kairos replied. He knew that Abelay was orphaned and that she had a younger brother she helped to raise, but he knew little of her parents. He could think of no delicate way of asking about them, and he was unsure whether she would want to be asked. Kairos saw his own family infrequently enough, but he felt reassured in the knowledge that they were safely at home on their farm, just a half day's ride to the west. Kairos had always been the odd piece in the family puzzle. His parents loved him and raised him the same as his brothers and sisters, but farm life had never caught hold of him. His mother taught them all to read and do simple ciphering, the sorts of things they would find useful in buying supplies and selling goods at market one day, when they were in charge of running the farm. With Kairos, however, he wanted more of the book learning and less of animal husbandry and crop rotation. He took care of his chores, at least as much as any young boy would, but never was interested in his older brother's rough sports, which even his sisters found more interesting than did he. When Kairos had been shipped off to Expert Davin to become a scribe, he and his family knew it was right for him. They were never going to make a proper farmer of him, so they let him find his fortune in city life. He visited on occasion and took comfort in knowing he was always welcome. He had not severed ties with him so much as taken a different direction. With Abelay, she had lost her parents some years ago, though Kairos did not quite know how. He briefly considered asking Gruder about them, but he somehow did not feel right about it. He would hear about them from Abelay when he felt comfortable enough asking her. Well, she always seemed like a nice girl. You be good to her, Kairos, you hear me? Else there will be no more seat for you in my bakery. Gruder winked at Kairos, possibly only half joking. I will, I promise, Kairos replied, and he meant it. It is beautiful, Kairos remarked, looking at the first painting Abelay showed him. After Gruder's, he could not help but head right over to Abelay's studio, where she worked mostly on commission, painting portraits. The rest of her works were done in her ample free time, portraits being a service of infrequent and unpredictable demand. The one she was showing him was a painting of the Katamic Sea during a storm. How did you manage to paint this without getting the canvas ruined in the storm? I painted it from memory. I see the Katamic often enough that I know its look,
and then I just painted it the way I saw the storm change it. I actually ran in as soon as the heavy rains blew in. She laughed. That whole painting would have been naught but a blur if I had kept it out in that downpour. The painting was mostly grays and dark blues, showing the Kitamic at its angriest. Waves broke against the rocky point north of the city, where the lighthouse sat, overlooking the harbor. Kairos remembered the storm, some 2 years earlier, and had spent much of the night with Ash curled up in his lap, terrified. Halfway through the storm, the wind had blown in the shutters on one of the windows, and he and Davin had scrambled to find a way to secure it again. They had lost a lot of the papers they had been working on to the wind-blown rain that came in, and they did not see Ash until the following morning, when they found him hidden in the back of one of the pantry cupboards. "It is amazing. You would swear this was a window overlooking the storm," Kairos commented. He could make out the brush strokes when he looked closely enough, but from a step or two back, it looked so real he would have expected to get his hand wet touching it. He certainly would not have wished to trade places with the lighthouse keeper that night. Abile set the painting back down against the wall, next to the rest of her works. She had no gallery to show them off, so simply kept them propped against the walls when they were finished. She had nearly a dozen of them. On occasion, someone would purchase one, supplying Abile and her brother with a bit of extra income. But these were the ones that still awaited a buyer, if they were ever to have one. Kairos walked over to another and knelt by it. "Who is this?" he asked. "That's Neelan, my brother. I painted it years ago. It does not look so much like him as it used to." The painting showed a lad of perhaps 8 years, perched on a stool with his hands folded in his lap. He looked stiff and sullen, his posture too straight to appear relaxed, and no smile on his serious little face. "It looks as if he was an unwilling subject," Kairos smiled.
"You know not the half of it."
"I was still practicing at portraits, hoping to be skilled enough at it to feed us. It was all I could do to keep the rascal in one spot. At one point, I threatened to bring the cooper over from next door and nail him to the stool." Abile laughed. "I have yet to get him back onto that stool, though nowadays I would say I do not need the practice as I once did. So where is your brother? I would much like to meet him." "Oh, someday you will, to be sure. He may have grown up since that portrait, but only in size. I cannot keep him under one roof. When he was little, I could make him behave. But now he's bigger than I am, and less afeard of a whipping if he causes trouble," Abile said.
"So what does he do all day while you work?" Kairos asked, genuinely curious.
"Odd jobs, he says. Helping haul crates and unload fishing boats down at the piers. Helping foreign merchants set up carts and stalls in the market. Making deliveries, that sort of thing. He brings in coins, but I wonder where they really come from. I doubt he does half what he claims."
"Have you any worry of him getting mixed up with lawless sorts?"
"Oh, plenty of worries. But he's not a bad boy. I think he just feels like he ought to help put food on our table rather than just eating it.
Have you thought of finding him an apprenticeship? I think a lot of boys just need someone to keep them on a narrow path, and a good tradesman should be able to manage that."
Kairos hoped he was not overstepping his bounds. Abile had been raising the boy for years, and he had never even met him. "Oh, to be certain, but he is a willful one. I expect they will make a merchant out of him one of these days, though I am not sure what type he would be," she said with a wink.
Kairos let the matter drop and wandered among the rest of the paintings. There was a vase of flowers depicted in one, the sort of things one would expect any younger painter to try a hand at. There were more landscapes, which seemed to be Abile's specialty, a shame since it did not pay as well as portrait painting.
"Is this one a self-portrait?" Kairos asked, pointing to the last painting near the far corner of the studio. It was a remarkable likeness of Abile. The eyes were the same deep blue. The cheeks had the pretty little dimples as she smiled. The hair the right color,
but styled somewhat differently, though Kairos knew little enough of women's fashion that he could not put a name to the difference. Her hair was shorter than in the painting, that much he could say with certainty. The style of the painting itself was somewhat crude in comparison to the rest. The brushstrokes were a bit more noticeable, and the colors perhaps a bit more vibrant and less realistic.
"No, though you are not the first to have thought so. That there is my mum. It was the first one I painted that was worth keeping. She was the one who taught me to paint, and she sat for a portrait for me. I was about 11 when I painted that," Abelay said.
"Your mother was quite beautiful. The resemblance is remarkable," Kairos said, still looking at the painting. He thus did not notice the blush that flushed Abelay's cheeks a bright red. Abelay closed up the studio early that day, and she and Kairos wandered down to the marketplace. Folks were gathering in larger numbers than usual, as a large merchant explorer vessel had returned from an expedition to the faraway ports to the south and east, bringing exotic wares back with them. Few had the spare coin to spend on the luxuries they brought, but just seeing the new and different goods they had in their rented shops and carts was enough to draw crowds. Kairos and Abelay held hands as they negotiated the flow of citizens and carts, lest they get separated. Kairos was not normally one to go down to the marketplace in the middle of the day, but even he could tell that there were more people on the streets than was usual.
"Oh, look at that," Abelay said. "Those patterns are stunning."
Her attention was fixed on a wagon load of silk cloth. They were all dyed in various colors and designs, with red gold, blue green, purple black, and a few with colors that seemed to change as you looked at them, a trick of the way the light caught them.
"Where are these from?"
she asked the lean, dark-skinned gentleman attending the merchandise. He had a thin face and a long, slender nose above a curled mustache and scraggly chin beard. The expression he wore was serene and friendly. He wore a long coat in typical Akkadian style, but his headdress was a long piece of purple silk that wrapped several times and dangled down to wrap around his neck.
"They from Kesh, my lady,"
he said in awkward but perfectly serviceable Akkadian.
"You like it, yes? Feel how nice."
He held the end of one of the bolts out to her and pressed it into her hands. Kairos also ran his fingers over it. The fabric was indeed, well, silky. Abelay had no doubt, never owned anything so luxurious, and could not help but betray her admiration of it.
"Yes, yes, you see now, so soft. Maybe he buy for you,"
the merchant said, looking at Kairos.
How much is it?" Kairos said.
He had never been comfortable haggling in the marketplace. The world-worn traders that set up shop here seemed to be playing a game whose rules he did not understand. He could hardly help but feel he was being played the fool, and he was likely correct.
"For your fine lady, 200 ekel each arm," he told them,
and Abelay gasped slightly, which Kairos took to mean that was a lot for fabric.
"Good deal. I like see pretty lady wear my silk. It good for business."
Kairos was unsure how the dressmaking profession worked, but he imagined that it would take 2 or 3 arms' length of fabric to make a dress out of.
"My lady, pick which silk you like. He buy for you."
As Kairos struggled for the proper response, Abelay took him by the arm.
"Oh, Kairos, no. Those are pretty, but I could not wear anything fancy like that. I would ruin it with paint inside a day. Come on," she said,
then led him away from the wagon and its presumptuous owner.
"You change mind, I still be here,"
he called after them, as they pushed into the crowd and left him behind.
"I just want to look, Kairos. I did not mean to buy anything. Everything is so interesting. I just want to feel it and smell it and hear it all."
She kept hold of his arm and took over leading them around amongst all the wonders of the foreign traders. They stopped at a small rented storefront that was stocked with distilled liquors from Takalia.
They made the strong drinks from local fruits and berries that had no names in Akkadian. The merchant who sold them was a well-traveled Gaulishman who knew the markets well and had given them names like Moonberry, Starfruit, and River Dream. He passed out samples poured into thimbles to anyone who looked both interested and with coin enough to purchase. He kept a careful guard against the drunkard beggars who might otherwise drink him penniless. Kairos and Abile both tried samples. Kairos picked one called Honeyfruit that was sweet and smooth, though stronger than he was used to. He was thankful for the tiny vessel it was provided in, lest he pass out right there in the marketplace. Abile sampled Forgetful Breeze and blinked several times as the sharp, cool beverage seemed to go straight to her head.
"You shall not find better distillers than the Tkalish. They make of it an art form," the proprietor told them.
His puffed and ruddy complexion bespoke a certain expertise on the subject that Kairos felt no inclination to argue with.
"Have you got anything a bit milder?" Kairos asked him.
While Kairos was certainly not above enjoying a good strong drink from time to time, he preferred remembering the occasion.
"Well, drinks from Tkalia are made to be strong, but I have other wares as well. I cannot afford to give samples, but I have this wine from Feru Maru that they make from mushrooms. I assure you, it is worth the price at 500 ekels," the merchant said.
500 for one bottle?" Kairos asked. He knew that wine was often expensive, but that was what he might make in a typical month. Lord Daryl's commission had fattened his purse, but not dulled his judgment.
"Good sir, I make my way to Akkadia every other year at the least and have yet to depart with a single bottle remaining. I will keep this shop front open until I sell what I have purchased abroad and then settle in for the season to enjoy a fine Akkadian summer. I shall ship out again with the autumn trade winds and do it all over again, and I shall expect my customers to be eagerly awaiting my return with more. My name is Droon Harwick, and you may ask anyone you like should you doubt my reputation."
"Well, Mr. Harwick," Kairos said, "suppose I were to offer you 400 in the prospect of another loyal customer awaiting you each autumn." Kairos much preferred wine to liquor, and thought that perhaps an indulgence while he had the coin in hand would not be entirely unjustified. Besides, it occurred to him that if his plans worked out for using magic to speed his work, he would hardly be short on coin again.
"Kairos, are you certain?" Abile asked.
"No, not entirely. But have you ever had mushroom wine?" he asked her.
"Well, no, but..."
"Neither have I. Why not have a go at it? I just finished a rather large rush job and have extra coin in hand. We should enjoy good fortune when it presents itself," Kairos said.
"Well reasoned, my good man. Make that 430 and you shall have your mushroom wine," Droon Harwick said.
Kairos lacked the wherewithal to bargain further and simply accepted the merchant's price. It was awkward enough having offered so much less than the asking price in the first place. He felt the man had done him a favor in asking back so little. The wine came in a glass jug with a small chain running through the cork and attaching to a small loop of glass near the top. It required no corkscrew to open. The glass itself had a greenish tint to it, but was otherwise clear. The liquid inside had a yellowish hue to it, but Kairos could not tell how much the color was distorted by the green glass. Toting his purchase at his side, Kairos took Abile by the hand again, and they continued their adventure in the market. They stopped and saw a juggler in an outlandish outfit, covered in ribbons and bells, tossing knives as if he had not a care for the danger. After the performance, he passed around a bowl and accepted coins from the onlookers, many of whom were happy to oblige for the masterful performance they had just witnessed. Kairos tossed in a few ekels in the hope that such entertainers would continue coming to the city. They stopped at another cart, this one sporting a series of wooden rods down one length, from which numerous necklaces, medallions, and charms were hung. They ranged from the exquisite to the quirky
and the whole spectrum between. The finest appeared to be carved from ivory and jade, and some bore stones that looked real enough. Others were simple carved wood, either painted in bright colors or left to the natural wood. There was an older man, wrinkled and bent, with deeply tanned skin, attending to the necklaces. Like many of the foreigners in the market, he was bundled tightly against the northern cold, though it was only a mild spring day by the local standards. He wore a knit hat, pulled low to just above his eyes, his gray, wispy eyebrows just poking out beneath it. He kept his hand inside the opposite sleeve of his jacket, which was a collarless, large button style with voluminous sleeves, common farther south.
"You do not want these," the necklace peddler said, his voice gravelly and slightly wheezy with age.
"Pardon me," Kairos replied, expecting that he had misheard the old man. The accent was one he was not familiar with, though Kairos's experience was rather limited in that regard.
"Go away, I said," the old peddler said. "You look, you touch, you no buy. I know you kind. Waste my time."
"Well, we might buy something, but we have yet to look," Abile said, examining the necklaces nearest her. She seemed especially fond of the jade, which was an uncommon sight in Acardia.
"Humph," the old man snorted. "Fine, look, I not stop you."
The old man looked perturbed, and Kairos began to suspect that yet another crafts trader had just sunk his claws into them. Abile picked out one of the necklaces from its pole and unlatched it. It was jade, shaped to form a tiny dragon, curled up in a roughly oval shape. She dangled it in front of her throat and showed it off to Kairos. "What do you think?" she asked him, smiling.
"I think it gives a bit of green to those blue eyes of yours. I think it suits you," he answered. "Amulet have old magic. Priest bless. Protect who wear it," the peddler said.
Kairos was immediately suspicious and cast his sight into the ether. He could not help showing a bit of surprise when he realized that it indeed was magical. He had heard of swindlers selling magic tokens, but until recently, it would not have occurred to him to check their claims. He wondered how many opportunities he might have missed out on to get real magical protection at Peddler in a Dark Alley prices. "How much?" Kairos asked, though the peddler had been speaking to Abile and not to him. The old man turned to Kairos with a critical eye.
"For you, 800, the peddler said, and then fixed Kairos with a stern eye and jutted jaw in challenge.
Abile quickly put the necklace back on the cart, afraid to touch it once she knew the price. 200, Kairos countered. "That spell is old and not so strong. My lady just likes the look of it." The old peddler seemed to be caught a bit off guard by Kairos's reasoning, but the last gambit he recognized and understood.
6, amulet still made of jade, the peddler said.
250. Kairos dug in, starting to get a feel for the process. "I know that jade is common in Kesh and Feru Maru. This did not cost you much at all. I shall pay for the trouble you took in bringing it here, but will not be fooled to thinking it a rare stone."
500. Lot trouble bring amulet here. You get fair deal, the peddler said.
Kairos was sensing that he almost had the hang of this haggling thing. The peddler was backtracking quickly on his price. "Come on, Abile. We shall find you another at one of the other traders." He called to Abile and held out his hand to take hers. As they turned to leave, the old peddler grabbed Kairos's sleeve.
"You win, you win. 300, the peddler said. You take advantage, old man."
"Deal," Kairos agreed, smiling, before Abile could object. He counted out 300 and took the jade dragon amulet from the peddler's cart. Handing the wine jug to Abile, he came around behind her and looped the chain around her neck, securing the tiny clasp. He took her by the shoulders and led her to the tiny, grubby mirror that sat on the cart for customers to see themselves in.
She bent down and inspected her reflection. She turned and looked up at Kairos.
"So beautiful," she said. "But you really did not have to. Thank you."
"Worth every echo." Kairos smiled down at her. While he meant it in the way that Abelay took it, he also wondered at the magical properties of the amulet. If it truly did offer protection of some sort, he very much wanted to strengthen the enchantment so that it would last and function properly should she need it. Their wanderings in the market had taken longer than either had realized, and the sun was growing lower in the sky. It was late afternoon, and the shallow warmth of midday was already beginning to wane. More importantly, both were growing hungry. Kairos had taken them to a cozy little tavern that straddled the unofficial line between the wealthy portion of town and where the craftsmen plied their trade. The sign above showed a bowl of stew and a ham hock, but its proper name was the Fattened Sow. Davin had told Kairos about it as a place where the scriveners would occasionally have their meetings, and he had always described the food in the fondest terms. Kairos had never been there, but his knowledge of nicer dining establishments was rather limited. They were also fortunate in that there was a visiting troubadour who had arrived on the trade ship and was performing at the sow that night. He was a Keshi native, with pale yellow skin and light blonde hair, with eyes that were so deep a brown as to appear black. He wore his hair in a mop of braids that were woven with beads that clacked as he moved his head. His long, thin beard was likewise braided, but tied with ribbons rather than beaded. Kairos suspected that was because beads would have been distracting as he sang. And sing he did. The troubadour, whose Keshi name Kairos and Abelay could not quite understand coming from the butchering the proprietor made of it in introducing him, possessed a haunting voice. While none in attendance could understand a word the chap spoke, the emotion came through clearly. As he sang, he played some sort of twangy-sounding instrument, whose strings he struck with a pair of tiny hammers. The troubadour apparently spoke none of the Akkadian language, and a second Keshi who accompanied him stood between each song and explained it a bit in halting Akkadian. They were local folk songs and children's stories that were common in their homeland. Neither Kairos nor Abelay had heard anything of the like before. The two supped on game pheasant and honey-glazed sweet potatoes, some of the finest fare Kairos could remember, and certainly the most elegant meal Abelay had ever had. They talked little during the meal, enraptured by the evening's entertainment. They sat together on the same side of a small table, just watching the master troubadour as he mesmerized the room. From there, they had gone down to the shore to watch the ships coming in from the harbor as the sun set behind them. They sat huddled together as the chill of the evening deepened. They had gone down at low tide and scampered down to the rocks that dominated the north shore of Akkadia and found a seat upon a low flat rock, worn smooth by centuries of waves. "Kesh is off that way," Kairos pointed to the southeast. "Our friendly troubadour tonight came a long way to play for us." He passed the jug of wine to Abelay, who took a swig. They had stopped to find a blanket at one of the less exotic stalls, but not to find proper glasses to drink the mushroom wine, and Abelay had been curious to try the drink. They had already passed it several times between them. It was perhaps not the proper way to partake of an expensive wine, but Abelay was unfamiliar with the etiquette of fine society, and Kairos could not be bothered with it if Abelay cared not. Abelay looked across the sea in the direction he pointed. "A long way to come just to sing to us, do you not think?" she joked. "It was awfully nice of him." She rested her head against Kairos's shoulder. They were warm beneath the blanket, but the sea breeze brought a chill that kept them from dozing as they relaxed together. They just sat for a time and looked out into the sea, watching the reds and oranges of the sunset reflect off of the waves, and the pink of the clouds as they hung above. As the last of the fishing ships pulled into port, Abelay asked, without lifting her head from Kairos's shoulder,
Have you ever dreamed of sailing the world? Of seeing all of Tellurac? You know, exotic places and strange languages? And where music like we heard tonight is common?
Actually, no. Ever since I can remember, I have dreamed of being a knight, like the ones in fairy tales. Not the stodgy old men that the king knights from time to time in Golis, but a true knight with a sword and armor who fights battles for glory and honor, Kyrus said.
The kind who rescues princesses and wins their hearts?
Abile asked dreamily, looking up at him. I'm not quite sure I ever dreamed that far, Kyrus said, smiling. I think maybe I was not dreaming of being the kind of knight that went about looking for a princess that way. As the sunset gave way to dusk, the air grew even more chill, and uncomfortably so. Kyrus and Abile gathered up the shoes they had taken off to walk on the beach. They scampered quickly through the ankle-deep waves that seemed far colder than it had when they arrived.
What a magical night, Abile commented as they brushed as much sand as they could manage from their feet and replaced their shoes.
Kyrus just smiled in reply.
Oh, but what magic I could show you, he thought. I do not think you're ready to see it, though. I will not spoil a wonderful night by risking it. Soon, though, I promise.
Kyrus walked Abile home, as a good gentleman should, and returned to his shop. Also returning was a gentleman in nondescript garb, who had been watching him from a distance all evening. Kyrus threw the bolt on the door and sighed as he escaped to his sanctuary of quills and spells. His evening with Abile had lifted his spirits and left him feeling a little dizzy in the head, possibly aided by the mushroom wine. It was a wonderful sensation, but Kyrus knew he had work to catch up on. Money aside, he had promises to keep to several clients. He set the half-empty wine jug aside on the table nearest the door. Alef Kalai Abdu. Kyrus lit the workroom and began going through papers with instructions on a playbill for the Akkadian Theater. It was quite a coup to win the job over the typesetters, since this was precisely the sort of thing they claimed to be best at. He had told the theater's proprietor that he would have a dozen completed by tomorrow evening, and he had split the day between sleeping and enjoying Abile's company rather than work on it.
That's all right, Kyrus mused. I shall just work through the night again. I get much more done with no risk of interruption.
He walked over to the stove and set on a pot of tea. He was far from drunk, but a bit of wine in the late hour had him less alert than he would have cared for. Making a circuit of the room, he laid out an array of blank pages, using any available flat surface he could find, and setting a quill and inkpot down next to each. By the time he had cleared enough space to work on all the playbills at once, his tea was done steeping. He poured himself a cup and went over to stand by his writing desk, where he had one of the sets of a quill, ink, and paper, as well as the instructions on how to compose the advertisement. Setting the cup down, he spoke, Haru Bidesi, Lioki Quatuan Gelora, sweeping his arms together and up, and the quills rose in unison along with them.
Just at that moment, there was a great crash. The door burst open and three men rushed in, one in the plain coveralls of a laborer, the other two dressed in the uniforms of the constabulary.
Surrender by decree of the king's justice, one of the uniformed constables shouted.
Kyrus stood agape, frozen in sudden fear as he looked alternately from the intruders to the floating writing implements and back again. The men carried clubs, and both uniformed constables had shackles hanging from their belts. The constables looked shocked as well, seemingly unsure how to proceed through the cluttered maze of tables and papers without having to touch one of the bewitched quills. The constables' resolve mustered itself first, however, and they charged across heedless of the tiny floating obstructions.
"Whoa, wait!"
Kyrus said, but quickly changed tactics as his startled exclamation failed to halt the oncoming lawman.
Haru Bidesi Lioki Quatuan Gelora,
he said as quickly as he could, casting the levitation spell again.
They were by far the heaviest objects he had lifted. But in his panic, he drew in ether to spare. Up rose the tables from the floor, and Kyrus sent them tumbling at the constables. Papers flew and ink spilled. The constables cursed, and Kyrus ran. He knocked over his tea as he made for the kitchen. There was a back door that led to the alleyway behind the shop, where old stews got dumped and chamber pots were emptied. Overturning cookware in his wake, he crossed the kitchen in two strides and pulled the door open. He grabbed the door frame as he ran through to make the turn down the alley quicker, but slammed into something solid. Another two constables had been waiting around the back entrance of the shop, and he had just plowed into one of them. The constable grabbed Kyrus as they collided, and with a shift of his weight, brought both himself and Kyrus to the ground as they overbalanced. Kyrus hit the cobblestones with the back of his head leading the way. Had he been conscious by then, he would have heard the second constable tell him that he was being arrested for the crime of witchcraft and that he ought not to resist. The second, at least, was no issue, but Kyrus would have to wait until the morning to learn of the charge against him. Brannis Soloran, however, would have to wait until the following night to find out, as he was startled awake from a terrible dream before finding out how it ended.